This is the Ethanol Report. We're speaking today with Jeff Cooper of the Renewable Fuels Association, and we're going to speak a little bit about some of the issues related to ethanol and the environment. And Jeff, I understand you just recently were at the annual meeting of the Society of Environmental Journalists. You talked about the role of ethanol as a greenhouse gas reducer and the issue of international indirect land use change. Now, what was your main message to these journalists who are reporting on the environment, and you know, one of their big issues is greenhouse gases?
Well, I was invited to the event as part of what was supposed to be a debate on the issues of ethanol's role in reducing greenhouse gas emissions, a debate over whether it's appropriate to include indirect greenhouse gas emissions such as indirect land use change in life cycle analysis. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to debate my would-be opponent from NRDC. He got caught up with some flight problems and wasn't able to make it. I was still able to deliver several important messages to the journalists in attendance there. It is a fairly large event, somewhere around 800 to 900 journalists from mainstream as well as regional and local and trade press as well. But my key messages to the reporters were that life cycle analysis for the last 20 years has shown that ethanol from corn reduces direct greenhouse gas emissions. There's broad agreement that corn ethanol reduces GHG emissions when compared to gasoline. Those greenhouse gas benefits are only questioned when theoretical emissions from indirect land use change are considered. The whole indirect land use change concept is fairly recent, whereas we've been looking at the direct life cycle emissions, corn ethanol, for a couple decades. So my point was that it is not currently appropriate to add indirect emissions from indirect land use change to the corn ethanol life cycle for several reasons. One is that the science behind measuring these indirect emissions is not ready for prime time. That type of analysis is highly speculative. It's assumption-driven. There's no consensus methodologies or tools to evaluate indirect emissions. And the other is that, you know, every fuel we use, frankly, every energy decision we make has indirect effects associated with those decisions. And we're not looking at any of those other fuels and their indirect impacts. As a regulatory community, we've honed in, you know, with laser-like precision just on biofuels alone. So our message is, you know, if we're going to look at indirect effects for biofuels, we need to look at indirect emissions, indirect effects for every energy source, and we need to be fair in how we account for those effects. And we can't do that until we have analytical tools and methods that allow us to do that with some relative certainty.
Well, I'm curious about how your message was received by the journalists, what kind of questions you got, and whether you felt that they understand this issue and the potential impacts and how it can be misused.
You know, I was fairly surprised by some of the questions and reactions I got. I think a common response was that, you know, a lot of the journalists weren't aware that only biofuels are being subjected to indirect, you know, analysis of indirect emissions by way of indirect land use change. They assumed that when we talk about gasoline's carbon footprint, that we were counting all the same indirect effects and possible emissions from those other fuel sources. So I think there was some amount of surprise that we are not comparing apples to apples and that the attributes of these energy sources are not being fairly compared. So I was pleased to see some light bulbs go on in that respect.
Well, that leads into another topic. We've seen a number of reports challenging the environmental impacts of petroleum, and this is being downplayed in the discussions of greenhouse gases and gasoline compared to biofuels, especially by the EPA and California and environmentalists like the NRDC. What are some examples that you have seen lately of reports that are really looking at the carbon footprint of petroleum?
I think you touched on a key point there that, you know, government agencies that are tasked with regulating biofuels, the EPA at the federal level and certain other high-profile states, the California Air Resources Board, those agencies have been saying for the last few years, as they've been looking at indirect land use change, that biofuels are the only fuel that causes any type of significant indirect emissions and the only fuel that causes any type of significant land use change. And there have been some environmental groups that have bought into that concept as well. We have always maintained that that is preposterous. when we have a global economy that is as dependent on petroleum as ours is, there are ripple effects through the economy that result from even a modest change in the marketplace. There have been a few things in recent weeks that have come out that would support our position that the indirect effects of petroleum specifically are not being fairly looked at and accounted for in most analyses. There's a fairly comprehensive analysis that was published by Global Forest Watch that looked at the kind of holistic carbon footprint of tar sands in Alberta. And what they found is that most previous reports don't analyze greenhouse gas emissions from several sources of emissions related to tar sands production. Most previous reports, they say, excluded emissions from land use change and emissions from exploration and development of the natural gas that's used in the tar sands process. So kind of their bottom line result was when we expand the analytical boundaries for tar sands in a similar way as we have with ethanol, we find that the environmental impacts are quite tremendous. In fact, they found that there is the potential land use change of about 4 million acres just in Alberta if we expand tar sands production in that region. And we're not talking about conversion of grassland or marginal land to tar sands production. We're talking about very carbon-rich peat soils and boreal forests. So these are the types of things that we've been asking the federal and state agencies to take a look at and consider when they're making comparisons to biofuels. So it's good to see some of this analysis coming to the surface. One other study, real quickly, that was published first week of October was a study by the Minerals Management Service that basically found our oil and gas production activities in the Gulf of Mexico are causing significant habitat changes and significant loss of wetland areas in the Gulf Coast region. Again, those factors are not accounted for in most, if not all, analyses of petroleum fuels.
All right, then. Thank you very much. We've been listening to comments from Jeff Cooper, Vice President of Research with the Renewable Fuels Association. I'm Cindy Zimmerman with the Ethanol Report.